first million naira was through Prince, and that was in 2020. And that's like $3,000 at the time. I remember doing the math and I'm like, okay, look, if I have a hit painting, this one hit painting to this. The statistics, so that means if I do like 12 hit paintings in a year, then like technically I've solved like my life problem. But like, it doesn't work like that. Like, you can't just conjure up that thing. You never know what people are going to connect to. And I wasted a lot of time and energy trying to predict, you know, trying to like game the system because it doesn't want to be game.
Anthony Ezekwo isn't just an artist. He's a storyteller, a sculptor of myth, and a businessman reimagining what African creativity can look like on the world stage.
You started off as a writer.
Yeah.
And you taught yourself to draw.
Yeah.
Now, you left school. What made you make such a crazy decision?
God, you know what?
Walk us through your creative process. How does an idea become a sculpture?
Man, I mean, that's a big, big question, I think.
In this episode of Afropolitan, we go deep into the mindset, the mastery, and the messiness of building a creative empire on your own terms.
This feels like a real substantial sculpture. What do you want people to feel when they have this in their home? We see the tweets, and every single day what we see is we love Afropolitan. This podcast is underrated. This is the best podcast ever. But the problem is 82% of you are not subscribers, but I know you guys are watching. So I need you to click the subscribe button so you can join the Afropolitan family. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Afropolitan podcast. On today's episode, I am excited to share with you not just about Anthony, who we're interviewing today, but about the project, the Auntie's Sculpture Collection. It's the first product that we're releasing through the Afropolitan podcast. But before we dive into it, we need to tell you why it exists. In 1897, British soldiers looted the Kingdom of Benin and stole 4,000 bronze sculptures. These sculptures held memory, they held history, they held our philosophies, they held our art. This wasn't just theft, this was cognitive colonization. Because when you rob a people of their art, you rob them of their beauty. You also rob them of their reference, right? Art represents a mirror into our world, into our civilization, and that was what was taken from us. But we're not complaining anymore. We're not begging for restitution. We're looking to resurrect what was never lost. And that is where Auntie's by Anthony Ezekwo in collaboration with Afropolitan comes into the picture.
So for those who are tuning in, Anthony is a visual artist as well as a sculptor. But before I dive into the Auntie collection, I want to talk about why Auntie's are so important to African history. Aunties represent curators of the African experience, and oftentimes they have been unacknowledged. They have literally held our archives before they were archives. They were literally institutions before we had institutions. They held so many important cultural artifacts, such as the way we braid our hair, the recipes of our cookings. They represent abundance. There's literally a reason why we call an African culture rich aunties. And we believe that with partnering with Anthony, we're able to showcase this type of history through art. And so now I want to talk to Anthony, and I really want to understand from you, Anthony, why you created this collection.
Yeah, I feel like for me, and thank you both, I feel like first of all for hosting this and really giving this life, because I feel like for me when I'm making something, and even the sculptures, since the first sculpture collection, my mind immediately had gone to celebration. And when celebration is going to like the weddings and when we all used to come together. And with that, the imagery of just women being in galas and just being happy, you know, in all the weddings, there's always that one auntie who's just like, despite whatever is happening, right, she's cool, she's chilling, she's vibing. And I wanted to embody that joy and like happiness and being able to kind of just be in that moment, you know, and like kind of almost get that memory and coalesce it and like almost freeze it into like the sculpture that people could interact with and buy.
And what are those details that you made sure was essential to the sculpture in order to capture that essence?
Man, I think to the designs of the sculptures are what I've always loved. And in simplifying the shapes, it's like first it's the circle of the face. Then there's like the triangle, you know, the upside down triangle of the abdomen. And then there's the bigger circle of the gilly. And with those three very simple shapes and with me altering them and pushing them, those were things I wanted to be very essential because I wanted to really make that African shape iconic. You know, when I look at, when I think of different cultures or different artists, whether it's like Jeff Koons or even like Sloan's work, you're able to see and identify these iconic shapes. And so I thought to myself, how can I really break down this really intricate design into very like simple building blocks that can then serve as a foundation for like bigger things? So I think for me, like those were the things I really wanted to be significant in each of the aunties, like the woman wearing the ghillie and just being in the moment, like smiling, happy, or like showing a whole range of emotions.
Walk us through your creative process. How does an idea become a sculpture?
Man, I think like sometimes it's weird, man. It takes me years, you know, because it's like some ideas just don't have the legs to stand on themselves right now. And so I kind of just nurse them in my head and I'm thinking through them and I'm wondering, okay, like, how do I fix this? How do I fix that? With this particular collection, it's like this has been since my first sculpture collection was maybe 2023. And it started with this big marble bust. And it was an experiment because it's like I had never really done sculptures before. And for us, it's kind of like the shift was, imagine your shop had been selling Fanta for years and everybody knows that this is a show that sells Fanta. Then one day you guys bring out Coke and everybody's, you know, so it was a scary shift at the time. And as luck would have it, J5, he saw a picture of them being made and he's like, bro, I want them all. And those were our first ever sales. And I think like since then, I'd kind of just been thinking, okay, how do we bring this process of like making them home? How do I make these, like, how do I expand the story that I'm telling? And how do I make it so that everybody can actually like be part of the story? So I guess like that, it started like that. And with the process, it's like, it starts with me sketching, you know, figuring out the shapes, figuring out the story I want to tell. Then it starts with me digital sculpting. And with these in particular, these are interesting because these are the first sculptures we're actually making here in Nigeria before we had to outsource our process to either like London or China. But now we're like, you know what, like let's find a way and bring this home. So from 3D sculpting, we've invested in a 3D printer. So it goes through that. And then from that, we're able to cast the mold. And from the mold, we have like, we can get to different materials. What we're seeing here is like fiberglass and marble dust and also bronze straight from Benin. So we're really like keeping the process as authentic as possible and handmade as possible and being able to just deliver quality stuff.
Anthony, so these pieces will live in places like from Lagos to London, South Africa, wherever in the world, right? How does that change how you approach your work? Because, you know, there's the theme I was talking to you about, like we are our own museums now, right? We don't have to cry about the fact that they've taken these things away from us. Like these pieces can live in anyone's home. You walk into it and that home is just a museum in of itself, right? Well, how does that change how you approach this work?
And I feel like in a conversation with you, actually, it kind of just made me, I think, move a bit more patient because it's like, again, I'm young, I'm existing in this very like hyper consumerist, like, you know, society where it's like, as an artist, you're trying to normally keep up with what's happening. And recently with my work, it's kind of like being able to slow down and realizing that like these things are going to live like far longer than I am, like, you know, and already like my work exists in all these different continents and people contextualize it in a different way. And for me, it just kind of just, it's like, it just gave me this breath of like, you know what, like relax, like pause, like breathe in and really be careful of what you're trying to say. Because it's like, at the end of the day, if I'm rushing and I'm just like, you know, rapid firing these things, it's not able to hold weight or gravity. Mm. But I've noticed that when I'm able to take care and craft something, that energy kind of flows back and is able to be a narrative that exists even after, you know, there's people discovering works of mine from 5 years ago and they're like, damn, like, okay, like this is what you were saying. This is how I feel. And yeah, I think that's kind of what I prefer, you know, as opposed to trying to chase the trends, trying to, you know, paint the celebrity and like tag them. In the past year or two, has been more of what do I want to say and how can I say it the best way?
You know, because I was talking to you about how painful this thing actually can be, because a lot of us who are growing up, we're disconnected from our African history. We don't even know that some of this art exists. And then it's when you walk into a museum in somewhere in Europe or somewhere abroad and you're like, oh, wait, this says from Benin. Is this the same Benin in Africa or in Nigeria? And you're saying to yourself, like, they make it seem like we weren't philosophers or we weren't craftsmen or we just had nothing. And then all of it was discovered when they came here, right? So, and the other thing I said to you about even the whole idea of building a network state, which is people tend to think it's about technology, it's about code. When you look at all civilizations, one of the things that always lasts throughout time is their art. You remember the Michelangelos, you remember the Picassos, you remember going to Rome to see the sculptures, the statues, all of that type of stuff. We had those and still have those in Africa. And I think this work is a way our way of reclaiming and resurrecting that truth.
No, for sure, because it's like a lot of people look at culture as this very static, like no moving thing. But like culture is actually this living, breathing, like energy that keeps flowing through us. And what you said about, like, I remember being in London and being in the museum and I'm like seeing all those artifacts and I'm like, damn, this is the first time I'm seeing these things, you know? And it's crazy because it's this weird feeling of you see them and you feel this disconnectedness because it's like, it's like seeing your teacher at a strip club. I think it's like you're seeing like this one thing you're used to, but in a whole different environment that you can't quite contextualize. And I think, you know, as artists right now, we're in this beautiful position to continuously like make history again and really dig through like that past and culture and figure out how to connect with people again. I feel like that to me is the role of the African artist now, you know, being able to pass along a message, but also to like connect with, you know, the people and for all of us to be able to craft this cultural narrative together.
Yeah. And, you know, I have this in my hand. This is very heavy. So this is like a real.
It's a lot lighter than what we used to have.
Yeah. This feels like a real substantial sculpture. And, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm curious, what do you want people to feel when they have this in their home, right? When they look at it, what are the memories that this should invoke?
Man, I want them to, when you see this, I want you just remember that, you know what, like, wherever you are, somewhere across like the ocean or somewhere across like, you know, the country, there is this culture that you have. Like, there is this like lineage that you've inherited just by virtue of being born. And I feel like that's what I want every African to feel when they look at my work, to understand that, like, you're not just, you know, this like island. Like, there is a thread that's connecting all of us that's allowing us to understand this. You know, for instance, a lot of, let's say, Europeans or Americans, maybe they've not been seeing Nigerian weddings and they don't understand like where Igele is. But like just seeing this already, like they understand that this is a regal, iconic and celebratory like dressing. And this is something that I like. And it's also been very interesting to see people from other cultures connect with it as well. So I feel like that to me is I want them to feel wonder and just connected, you know, to me, to us, like to our stories and to want to push.
Yeah. And I'm also hoping, because I know we have African-Americans from the diaspora that also watch our podcast as well. So what I'm also hoping is that they are able to connect with this as well, because aunties is quite significant in their culture as well. Exactly. Right. And hopefully linking back to something that has been taken away from all of us as well.
Yeah. And I think with my work, that's been a major goal, whether it's been like Yasuke, you know, me painting these random paintings and it really connecting to that audience. Because at the end of the day, like, those are our distant cousins. And when they see these things, they see this imagery, they see this work, there's always been this very much, you know, feeling of like, damn, are we? And I think I really want to foster that with this.
You know, when we had Vusi on, we were talking about how we play eternal games with eternal people. And I think it's what I was saying to you, even when we were talking about the process of doing this. And I said to you, take your time, because this work you're doing is going to outlive you and maybe stay into the generations and eternal, right? Yeah. And when you think about it from that perspective, even though a lot of us have never gotten to witness the Benin bronzes ourselves until we go to Europe, but they're still there. They're still preserved. They've been there 4,000 plus, like, sorry, not 4,000 plus years, but hundreds and hundreds of years, right? To you, where do you feel like your work fits into that lineage?
Man, I mean, that's a big, big question. I think more and more recently, I've been asking myself. I think for me, at the end of the day, with grappling with this digital renaissance, grappling with like what it feels like to be a young man, and like as a Nigerian, as an African in these times, you know, I feel like for me, I want my work to just stay in terms of like those storytellers, those craftsmen, those people who were able to navigate the culture in a way that allowed people to see this artist and their work and also see themselves reflected back. Mm-hmm. You know, we've always had those writers, those artists, the sculptors, you know, the speakers, the teachers who were able to invoke that feeling in the people, whether it's Chinua Achebe, like Wole Soyinka, whether it's Benin Nwonwu, like these, Yusuf Grillo, like these are great artists that when the people saw their work, they saw that their culture was reflected. It felt like, okay, maybe we're not all just like, you know, worker bees, like spinning this wheel. Maybe there is something like deeper here. And I feel like I want my work and even me by extension to fit in that, like that line of just great artists who are able to speak about the times, reflect them, and also allow people to feel safe in it.
So I'm going to bring this back again to why Afropolitan is doing this, right? When you own a piece of Auntie's, you are participating in restoring African memory. In the 20th century, maybe nations were built with shared borders or through land borders. In the 21st century, it's going to be built through shared meaning, right? So you can picture a world in which a purchase of Auntie's allows you to now participate in that restoration of African memory. And we're excited to go on this journey because we want to find out kind of scattered people actually do this, right? We are scattered across nations, but can we, through this, now start to build art as infrastructure.
So to connect to African history and get a piece of the Anthony and Afropolitan collection called Auntie, make sure to click the link in the description. And this is your way you can support our channel. And now tune in to Anthony's full podcast episode.
I was like, is it 10 seconds yet?
Don't worry.
No pressure.
So you started off as a writer.
Yeah.
And you taught yourself to draw.
Yeah.
Now you left school, right? We're going to jump right in.
I was going to remind of that today. Like some article that they wrote, and they're like, yeah, the way he left. So I was like, okay, fair enough.
What made you make such a crazy decision?
Dog, you know what? It was actually in the middle of exams. Like, I was writing my fourth or fifth. It was fifth year. I was in my fifth year, actually. I think fourth or fifth. One of them. I've forgotten that. But I remember I was doing exams, and I'm just doing the math in my head because they're suspending me twice. Like, so one, I didn't go to church. That's somebody suspended me the first time, fair enough. And then, like, the suspension, like, it used to be crazy, like, what they would do is like, they used to wait. They wait for exams to come out. Your exams to start, rather. And like on your first day, you're suspended. So you can't write your exams. So it was like very like devious like type shit. So they had done that twice. And I was just like, so the first time again, I didn't go to church, fair enough. Like I missed like 20 something services. So like, bro, you're going. Then what did I do the next time? I had written like two essays about them in like in those next couple years. Cause I was like, bro, like this is taps. Like we're all insane here. And they weren't too happy about it, but they couldn't suspend me for that because it's like, now everybody's going to ask like, okay, where's the essay? Like let's read. And they didn't really want that. So what they did was kind of funnier. They saw me one day and they were like, this guy, your facial hair. It's a dress code violation. And like that. Yeah. Suspended me again. Four weeks each time. And like, because they were suspending you at like your exams, it meant that you're basically adding an extra year because you have to retake your exams and they're not going to give you a retake because they suspended you. So it was like all this institutional type frustration. So I remember like studying for, again, it's like fifth level exams. Like, and I remember I was thinking like, dog, this is my fifth year. I still have 2 years left in this place for a degree I don't want. And these guys are frustrating me. Me, I'm frustrating them. None of us are happy. I was like, yeah, you know what, man? Like, it was crazy that day. I remember I just called the driver. This driver guy I met like maybe like 2 months prior. I was like, look, I'm in Ottawa right now. Just pick me up tomorrow morning, 5 a.m. I know, man, you couldn't just leave like that. So I remember it was so dramatic. Like, it was raining. I had to pack my things in the car. That was cool. And I'm running. And just like, you know the way you're just moving? And because it was raining, I guess the security guards weren't like outside checking.
Yeah.
So it just turned out like working out. So I'm just left. Told my roommates, I was like, bro, GG. And I just left. So that's kind of how, like, that day happened. It was just more of a thing of, what the hell are we doing here? Like, okay, at that time as well, a key thing was, this was peak NFT boom. And even before the NFT boom, I had been doing stuff like Reman prints and all that. Like, I had been figuring out how to make this craft and living for myself. And it's like, that was working. Not working perfectly, but it was moving. And I was like, this degree thing, I'm not even opposed to a degree, but I was like, this school, they're trying to kill me. Like, it just doesn't make sense. So yeah, I was just like, yeah, like, pff, I have to leave. So I just left that day. And I was like, okay, step zero complete. Now, how am I going to tell my dad? Like, how am I going to communicate this to everyone? So it was like a whole huge windy, like back and forth, like step from there. Like it was very chaotic. It was chaotic as well. Because at the same time, I feel like my dad and I weren't in a good place to have a proper conversation. And so it's like we tried to have one, and I felt like something he said didn't really. I was like, why do you say that? So I left home, which was again also like, can you imagine? Like, I'm not even thinking about this. I'm just like, you know, okay, I need to figure this thing out. And nobody's quite understanding what's going on and how bad this was. So I remember I left home. I was living in like hotels and Airbnbs for like 2 months because I was trying to find a place. And it's like, and that kind of thing, like family isn't going to want to be in the middle. So you kind of have to like find your way. So it was weird. Like I lived in my guy's Ebuka's house for like 2 weeks. I finally found a place. So it was just, and I stayed there for like 2 months before like me and my father could like kind of just start talking to you. I feel like the 2 years like we spent kind of helped us. That space kind of just gave us perspective. But yeah, and like a nutshell, that's kind of what it was. It was just very turbulent.
And so this is, you leave in dramatic fashion. Oh, it's turbulent. Your family is like, I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
How did you know this is worth it? I'm doing something that's working.
I feel like, because at the time it's also like, you know, I'm not like crazy. It's like the minute I'm realizing that, okay, I've been cut off. Essentially, it's like, okay, this arts thing, we have to make it work. Over the years, I was like gauging like the community. I was like, okay, like people have been seeing my work for a while, but I don't think they've met me. I don't think they know who I am. I'm like, okay, damn, we have to start doing pop-ups. We did like 3 pop-ups leading up to a huge exhibition. And at the time, galleries weren't really like interested. Like I remember there's this exhibition where I'd gone to at the beginning of that same year. And I'm talking to the curator. I'm like, showing him like the red man. I'm like, look, like I have some buzz. Like, and she says to me, she's like, dog, like until you like paint with canvas, like you're not a real artist. And it's like, at the time I was hurt, but like now I'm like, guy, like you're a grown woman. Why are you beefing me? Like, I was just trying to show you what I was doing. So I think for me, I also was very like cognizant of the fact that like there was a pushback on a particular industry, even though now I realized it was deeper than even that. So I think for me, it was just like, how did I know? I didn't, but it was like, it was working. It was paying like some bills. Like people were knowing me for it. And I was like, you know what? Like, this is something I enjoy doing. And as opposed to chemical engineering, like I know a lot about it. So I was like, you know, let's just keep pushing. And I think that's what it was, like just this leap of faith that almost somehow, I don't know about how like tomorrow's going to go, but like, let's wake up and see.
Mm-hmm. Wait, chemical engineering was what you were studying?
Bro, I was studying chemical engineering. And it's so fucking annoying because like you ask me what chemical engineering is now, like, I don't know, I didn't know what was going on. Like the lecturers started looking at me. Me, I'm looking at them like, we're all like, and I said, well, both of us were unhappy, like, because it's like, this guy, like.
Well, but what made you choose that course?
Like I said, like, I think my dad had a vision.
For you.
For me, he was like, you, because I was good at science. And like, I'm still very interested in science. And like, but it's like, at the end of the day, those interests don't necessarily carry all the time to like a degree and all that. And even if they do, it's like, I couldn't do anything in that kind of environment. Like some people can survive in that kind of like environment where like they tell you ABC and you do ABC, but it just wasn't working for me. And it's not even like I was a stubborn kid. It's just like, this was just insane. Like it was like,
you go to church
like twice a week, 6:30 every morning, blah, 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 blah. You know, adults are talking crazy to us. Like, you know, you have to wear this, do this. You have to speak to people a certain way. You call your head pastor, papa, or like, the whole thing was just very insane to me. It felt like I was in a Black Mirror episode. And it's like, at home, that's not the kind of culture I was raised in. Like my father and I, like, we don't go to church. Like we're still Christian. Like we still go, like me, I go like to church, maybe like in my own quiet time. But like, it wasn't like this whole thing of you're a demon because you haven't gone to church. We were never raised like that. So for me, I was seeing like this kind of extremism face front for the first time. And it terrified me. I was like, God, what's going on? Like, I didn't know that people were living that kind of like life where it's like your pastor says A and now you have to do A or you die. Like, I don't know. It was very confusing to me. So I think that, yeah, Covenant, it just wasn't the right environment. Like, I could have studied chemical engineering and like done cool, but not with that environment. Yeah. Like, it was just impossible.
I don't know if I've ever told you this story, but I almost went to Fit Academy. Did I ever tell you?
Yeah, you told me.
So for the listeners' benefit or for the viewers' benefit. So this was time to go to primary school or secondary school. My parents take me up to Fit Academy. Fit Academy is the...
Can I explain it?
Yeah, please explain
it's a Ponzi scheme. So basically, like, if you're... And the way I think about it is that, like, if you're a pastor or a religious leader, you need to make sure that the one thing, your one fear, is running out of followers. And, like, I feel like different individuals were able to kind of configure their fellowships in a way where it's like, somehow we're always able to bring more people. Maybe this guy starts writing a book. This guy, like, you know, he starts, like, what's it called? He says, you know what, within, like, this X amount of miles, there's always another church. Like, cool. Those are all effective. But I feel like we're in a post-method of, look, we're going to go to education from the grassroots. As you're learning ABC, I'm there. Like, as a picture, like, it's incredibly effective because at the time, I'm 16, 17, and I'm interacting with other 16, 17-year-olds, but, like, they're different because they've passed through, like, this 16 years of this integrated education of this person is God. Everything he says is God. He told us no jeans. He told us we can't bring folks to school, no folks to school. He told us if they catch us with someone of the opposite gender, like after 7 p.m., it's a sin. And it's like, that does something to an individual, I feel, because at the end of the day, I feel the world that we now live in, and I've always lived in, has always been more dynamic than that. Mm-hmm. And now you have like these robots who you talk to stand up, they stand up. You talk to sit down, they sit down. And it's hard for them to integrate into like actual society. Mm-hmm. And like we saw that. So it was a very weird time.
And it's important that we explain what we're also talking about here. You went to Covenant University in Ogun State, I believe.
Yeah, it was Ota Ogun State.
Ota Ogun State. And Covenant has a secondary school or primary school. I don't know what the equivalent is in the US, but
primary is elementary.
Elementary. Okay.
I think primary is elementary and middle school combined.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
So, yes. Yeah, those two.
So Faith Academy is the primary and elementary combined. Faith Academy is the
elementary and middle school.
Yes. And then Covenant University is literally college, right? And so I remember my parents take me over there. I'd passed the written exam, but they used to do a three-day orientation. So the orientation is for them to interview you in person, and this is the first time my parents are hearing this, by the way. So when they watch it, we're doing a full-time confession. So we go to the school, we're doing orientation. You know, you sleep, it's a boarding school. You sleep on the boarding school. They're telling you that you can only use vouchers to pay for stuff. They're telling you to... I remember I did Holy Communion straight, did like Asara, did you're drinking like Asara for Holy Communion. And then you're doing... I forget what the... They should give you small bread for the thing. So I remember just being there like, yo, is this about to be my life? And I remember like my entire body... It was one of the first times in my life, and there have been other times it's happened like that, but it was one of the first times in my life where my entire body revolted. Like, I was like, if I come here, either I win or they will win. But the way it's looking, they will win.
You can't win against that kind of structure, bro. Like, it's a system. And that's the thing, like, to make it even worse, by the time I was writing these things, like, I had a friend who had been sexually assaulted by a lecturer because they had found birth control pills on her. And birth control pills are like normal for like a woman that age. Yeah. But like again, in the place of Covenant, you would get expelled. So he's saying, look, either you do XYZ or I go to the management. And that was fucked. Like that was a situation lots of like young girls found themselves in that place. Like I was physically assaulted. I remember they packed me on the bus, they hit my head, puts me. I was like, guys, they hit my head on the bus and they're like, where's the scar? So it's like there were like lots of these like layered forms of like verbal, physical, sexual abuse that students were facing in that place. Like students would die like on Monday and that's the end. Like they would just come, sanitize the rooms and they would be done. And it would be like, you know, when you're questioning your own self, like did this thing happen? Like are we being, lecturers would die. There's no moment of silence. It's just done. And I was just like, bro, you guys have to be playing, man. Like, you guys have to be joking.
So, because I knew, and I don't want to say like I knew all of these things would happen.
But you could feel it.
But I could feel it. So, time for interview comes. This is the third day of the orientation. So, I go in there with a plan, and my plan was they must not accept me into the school. Whatever I have to do, they must not accept me. So, as we're going for the orientation, my parents are walking me in, but you know when you go and it's only you and the people, there are three people interviewing you. So as my parents are walking me in, I'm hyping them up like, yeah, I'm going to go in here. They're definitely going to accept me.
And how old were you at this time?
I must have been like 12, 13, right?
Okay. That's a ripe age.
Yes. I'm hyping them up like they will accept me. This is about to be lit, right? as soon as I go in, because they don't let your parents come in, as soon as that door closed, I look to them like, you must deny me from coming to the school. They're like, and to them, they were shocked. They never heard anyone coming there. So
you're
I literally said, you must deny me. They're like, what? I'm like, you must deny me. You see that weapon that is fashioned? It's me. If you allow me to this school, I will become the thing that destroys the foundation of the school. You must deny me from entering this school. I'm telling you, I think what shocked them was they had probably seen the interaction I was having with my parents before they came. So the personality changed, the shift. They're like, I said, deny me for coming to this, your school. I don't want to come here. Please just send me back. So they clearly denied me. Now, on the way back to Lagos, my parents were like, I don't understand. Now, my parents started consoling me. Sorry, mom and dad, but I didn't want to go to that school. They started consoling me like, no, wow. This is not a reflection of your career or your ability. You do well. There's somebody else that will accept you.
Wait, they told you you're not getting in.
Yeah, they'll tell you, like, they'll let your parents know whether they're accepting you based on
that day.
The interview. Either that day or the next day. Okay. But the point was, they should have denied me. So we're now heading back to Lagos. My parents are consoling me because they're like, and me, I'm fake crying too. Like, I really wish that I could have gotten in. I don't understand why they wouldn't accept me. My parents are now saying to me, like, don't worry, sorry. That there'll be a place. God has a plan for you. I'm like, he definitely does, because he definitely was not going to be here. But anyway, that's my story. I just knew, like, I could not go to this school.
You know, like, that interview process, I remember it now because I should have done that. But my dad had preempted me because he knew my head. He was like, look, if you don't enter this place this year, you just wait at home, man. You enter next year. I was like, fuck. But I remember my guy, his name is Victor. I need to catch up with him after this. But Victor was just like, he had that same mindset. He's like, it's not. And I remember he's sitting next to me in the interview thing, and he's just determined to not make this shit work. And where I almost started laughing is that they asked him, they're like, what do you want to be with, like, in the future? And this is like a whole, like, interview process. Victor looks at them, he thinks for a minute, he goes, I want to be happy. And you see, like, Nigerians, I was like, bro, like, they look at each other like, happy. And obviously, you didn't get it.
Because you were clearly not focused.
Serious. But me, the problem was, I was thinking, I was like, damn, man, I'm about to be home for a year. And I was too scared. But I feel like that one period of, like, fear kind of cost me 5 years when I think about it, in terms of how, like, sometimes, especially like Nigerian person society, like, you don't want to say that thing or do that thing that you know is right for you based on, like, you're scared of the backlash. But I've also learned that, like, you pay for that thing. You pay for it in years and, like, that silence.
In time, because
everybody's life is just going to be going on. At the end of the day, it's your life. If you end up unhappy and you're failing at this thing, they'll still blame you. Like, you're still the problem. So I was like, oh, fuck. Like, I kind of have to, like, make... And that's another thing I think that brought me to that decision, where it's like, I was getting older. Because at 15, 16, they ask you, why are you here? You can say that, yeah, it was my dad. But when people are like, oh, sorry. 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, it's like, why are you here? You're upset, you're failing. Oh, my dad. It's like, come on, bro. Like, at some point, you have to do something.
Take ownership of your life.
Take ownership of the situation, because it's not your parents. Your parents aren't going to live that life. It's you. So I feel like, yeah, it was dawning on me that, yeah, I'm fucked. But then it's also my responsibility.
Wait, how did you just pick that school? Was it your parents?
My dad picked the school.
Was there a reason?
Dog, I think we're still, like, unraveling. I don't know. I think
you said we're still unraveling.
I think there was a vision that our school had, that it was like the top, and some people still believe that.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to have dented that image, like, publicly. I'm happy that I've been working tirelessly years after, because that's just not the truth. Because not many people had, like, really interacted with the nitty gritty and, like, shown people on the outside. Because, by the way, there's no, like, you can't carry SIM cards. You can't have phones. So, like, how information used to leave the school was very controlled, because they owned the Wi-Fi, meaning that almost sometimes if they're doing something crazy, like shaving our heads, or, like, maybe they're hitting people, they just switch off the Wi-Fi, bro. Like, nah, nothing. In 2 weeks, are you guys going to remember to tweet this thing? So that's, like, how they used to, like, manipulate information coming from there. It was, like, a very state-controlled thing.
Yeah.
And it taught me a lot about how, like, people in power can abuse that power, and also, like, how that structure can be so institutionalized, because it's like, it was layered. It was almost beautiful. Like, it was crazy.
Etcher, remember that time I walked into a bank? I'm not going to give the name. And I asked them for $1,000. And they told me, no, they cannot withdraw any dollar for me. And I was so upset. And I just remember asking everybody, how can I solve this issue? And I'm so happy that I finally have VBAN to finally solve this issue for me.
You know, the thing is, you should be able to have access to your money anywhere in the world when you get paid, right? So I'm grateful we have VBAN as a sponsor for the Afropolitan podcast. With VBAN, you're able to get paid in foreign currencies, whether it's pounds, USD, euros, and you can actually spend it in local currency as well. Now, you're also able to get a virtual card, which you can use to spend in and pay for services across the world, right? So I'm grateful to have VBAN as a sponsor.
You can download it on the Apple or Google Play Store. And remember, when you sign up, you use Afropolitan so they know you came from this podcast.
Yes. So let's switch gears. Let's not be like it's a covenant bashing segment. But to be fair to them, though, a lot of employers say that they love to hire people from Covenant University, but that could also speak to, let's not even,
my question
layers,
has always been,
layers.
Is it worth it? It's like, layers, is this human layers, abuse, like, there's layers. Worth you having great employees?
Because one could argue that the school does churn out people who would be much more amenable for employment, obedience. So that's probably how it works. But let's move on.
Yeah.
What would you say is one of the biggest misconceptions monetizing your art?
Biggest misconceptions. That's a good one.
How is that? What is that process like?
Be like monetizing?
Yes.
Man, I think it's been very dynamic. I think prior to, let's say the past like 5 years now, or even like more, I say five because now like this is like the fifth year since like the Redman Yasuke, where we like feel like we really, really like hit something in terms of, okay, this is how we can connect to people. So at the beginning, I tried many things. Like I tried maybe digital downloads, wasn't really connecting. We had tried like, I don't know, maybe like selling it one-to-one as a digital thing, but it wasn't quite like pushing. And I realized at the time that it was just a matter of the work and like the brand. Like, cause at the time I'm just like a young guy, like just doing this thing. But I feel like when I painted those two paintings, like the Redman and Yasuke, like that year, it really did break through something, especially during COVID, because it's like everybody's like chronically online and now I'm able to kind of make these things that people can like have. And it was through prints. So I remember my first like millionaire was through prints, and that was in 2020. Yeah. And I remember, and that's like $3,000 at the time. I was like, damn. If I remember, it's definitely $3,000. I remember, like, I would never forget this. I remember, like, wow, like, I'm just counting. I'm just looking at the numbers. I'm like, yo, like, this is crazy. My bank, they froze my account that day. Because they're like, bro, you only 100K max you had. Now, how do you have one? They actually froze. I couldn't use my account for,
What bank was this?
First bank. Was
of
first
course.
Bank. For, like, 12 hours, my account was frozen. And I'm like, guys, stop now. Like...
But this is an error.
They're like, how come?
They
like,
say, yo, come? Boy, like, what are you going to use with this money?
They're like, no money. This, see, they said, this is open this account. 1 million has not passed through. How do you not have it now? So, stuff like that was interesting. And I think from then, like, just continuing, like, posting and, like, sharing work online, like, connecting with people. I remember I painted, like, Lucifer, like, from the show. And like the lead actress, like she followed me. She also got one. So like we're having like all these like crazy like moments of like connecting with a lot of people in music, in film, like in fashion. And I was like, oh wow, like okay. I remember doing the math, man. I'm like, okay, look, if I have a hit painting, this one hit painting did this. Statistics. So that means if I do like 12 hit paintings in a year, then like technically I've solved like my life problem. But like it doesn't work like that. Like you can't just like conjure up that thing. You never know what people are gonna connect to. And I wasted a lot of time and energy trying to predict it.
Mm.
And I remember thinking like, damn, I'm a one-hit wonder, man. I'm washed. Fuck. At 20. And then I remember, I was like, you know, let me just paint this random story I had about this like African samurai. Like nobody cares anyways. Painted that, then that here. And I was like, okay, fair enough. I'm just going to like try and like stop predicting or trying to like game the system because it doesn't want to be gamed. And then I think from then, like NFTs now came. And I think the blockchain, that was like... a very crazy multiplier, because that was like every digital artist like stimulus check, because everything you were doing, all that effort and energy was just being multiplied by 10 because of a lot of speculation. But then, even then, I also knew that there was a bad side to it, where it's like a lot of artists who were like younger than me, let's say in craft or skill or age, we're kind of being fed this dream of like, yeah, if you're an artist, like this is the best, this is like the best way to become like a multi-millionaire. And it's just like, I remember I tried to explain to them, like, guys, I don't think so. Like, I mean, I already saw something in my past life. I don't think that's how it works. And obviously, like, you get the music to stop a bit. And it's like, now you kind of have a lot of people. Then you had a lot of people just leave because they're like, I'm all this art piece a bit too long. But I feel like the people that are staying are seeing that, like, there is still a way. Like, there are still people who are interested. It's just a lot like the barrier has been, like, heightened a bit. So I think, yeah, monetizing has been that. Like, print, NFTs, we're experimenting with, like, NFC chips right now. And I think that's what it's been.
You and I talk about this offline, but I wanted to bring our conversation here. Can you speak a lot to the problems or pain points a lot of artists, especially African artists, have with payments globally, right? Prior to crypto or blockchain, it was a nightmare. So can you speak more to that, especially from the NFT side?
I love speaking about it because it's like, it's actually a different world.
Yeah.
As of 2019, 2018, when I was doing commissions, I remember if like, an American needed to pay me, I had to use this thing called World Remit. Mm-hmm. World Remit would like give them, send them this email. They have to pay with their card. And it was a bit suspicious because nobody likes to enter their card details. They just want to send money. So you send that money, then World Remit will send it to like my First Bank dorm. Then I have to go physically to First Bank and I collect the cash. And like sometimes maybe like you could convert it. A lot of them convert it, but they'll take some funny cuts. So maybe if you send me $100, I end up getting like 89 in value. And it was just a very weird, convoluted process because this process would take days. And that was just all I knew because that's all you could do. But then as time was going on, crypto to me, like past the speculative market, to me, crypto, what blew my mind and like still does is that you can be in
New Zealand,
like some random place. I can be in Egypt. You can send me one USDC. And I can get that one USDC in value in less than a minute. To me, that's insane. Like, that's near magic. And I feel like because a lot of, like, people in the Western countries don't need that kind of technology because, you know, their rails make sense, it's kind of lost on them just how powerful this thing really is that we all take for granted. And I think, yeah, for, like, African creatives, I think for me, like, my thing has always been, like, crypto is, like, I feel like one of our last, like, chances to, like, level the playing field because for a while as a Nigerian, you're kind of away from that, like, financial center. Like, now, like, a joke I used to make with people, not a joke, like, a statement, I was just like, bro, like, this PayPal that you guys all love, for us, you can only send. You can send as much money you can through PayPal as a Nigerian, but you can't receive a single dollar. And for me, that was always insane. So I think that crypto, like, that time, it really did, like, allow us to, like, start freely exploring other stuff.
And, you know, actually, a point I want to make about PayPal is even, and this is why I'm against it, at least from an African perspective, is so in 2020, I also had a company. We made $10,000.
Damn.
Yeah. And PayPal held my money for 6 months because they were like, the moment they saw I was in Nigeria, they literally sent me some funny email. It was like, yeah, we're not really sure about this company. Suspicious, you know, it's not clear. So we're going to hold your money for 6 months and then we're going to close your account and we're going to send you back the money. After that, I said, never again. 6 months?
PayPal has closed
six months?
See, they've closed like four of my accounts, man. Like, even from your name, I feel like they start doing risk assessments from your name. They saw Chica. They said, so we know who you are.
Yeah, Sharp has closed my account.
Bro.
So the thing is, people don't realize that a lot of Nigerians who have to navigate global financial systems have already figured out so many hacks to figure it out. But the reason you have to is they'll start telling you all these excuses that don't make any sense. It's like this unusual activity. Oh. And what I always tell Chica is, it's unusual for a nigga to make money.
It's unusual, like, yeah.
So they're like, yeah, hey, we're going to need to calm this down because we're going for generational freedom or financial freedom.
I'm like, bro, how? Like, that's why when the Mercury thing happened, it's like, it was annoying. Because Mercury, we've been back with them for like 2 years.
Yep.
Like, sure, we're not millionaires, but we're bringing healthy volume. And so for them to just make that decision, like, damn, like, we went from having our US accounts with you guys to not. I was like, but I wasn't surprised. Because my business partner, like, he thinks I'm crazy because him, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've seen so many of our accounts get closed and I've seen so many of, like, deals get stalled or canceled because of this payment thing. the way we have like our accounts and the way we structure our finances, it's almost like I'm a mad person. It's like I'm traumatized. So for us, it's like that payment thing has always been important. You can be in New Zealand, be in Iceland. If you want to pay us, there's a way. Don't worry. Like, we'll sort it out. And I think that's really important.
But Anthony, what did it feel like? Because, you know, your dad had this vision for you.
Yeah. Right?
What did it feel like for him when you now started bringing back home the checks? Like, when you're telling him, like, Dad, somebody paid for one print, $3,000. Like, what are we saying here?
I think it was, like, confusion. Because I remember, like, 2020, again, like, because me, I just always used to be on my laptop. I don't think he knew what I was doing. Now that I think about it. Like, so again, he was kind of, he was eyeing me. He was wondering, like, I had like, he thought I was doing Yahoo at some point. So I was like, bro, like, no.
Well, I mean, you said you just carry a laptop.
Yeah, I was also, and he said, it's like, why don't you, this guy's always on his laptop? And then I started like bringing up prints, you know, like packaging things in like our small living room. And he's just like, I remember this. I can imagine, so that I'm older, I can imagine that for him, because I didn't study arts. Like, I was studying science. I was always in the science classes. But I was used to follow the, like, literature kids to, like, you know, their own things. I used to be involved to a point where those guys in secondary school used to be like, bro, like, go to your class. But, like, why are you here? So I think for him, it was very, like, surprising, because it's like, I didn't really connect these dots, but okay. And I think that when I finally, like, did leave, and we're having, like, this friction, it's like, even me too, I realized, okay, on my own part too, I need to kind of like show you what it is that I'm doing and like be also clear, because that communication had broken down. And I feel like the minute he kind of saw it, he understood. Like, for my parents, funny enough, even when we weren't living together, they came for every show. So you can imagine we're beefing. Like, you know, we haven't spoken in a while, but you still come just to like see like what's going on. Yeah. So I think it was kind of like, you know, at first like shock. But then it just like evolved into more of, okay, I understand. And also him expressing his concerns, which interestingly I had, because like with the arts, it's a very unpredictable thing. January can be a great month. It can be a millennium, but February, like, you can be done. And I think that's something that I had also been working to like mitigate that, like, so yeah, I think it was communication. I think, yeah, it was like surprising and like support. Like, okay, fair enough. Like, I see what you're doing. Cool, cool, cool. However, like, this is what I think. And I'm like, okay, yeah. Da, da, da. So I feel like, yeah, like, we're in a great place now.
What would you say in the process of getting to this stage, what has been a failure or a risk that you've taken that changed everything? Where, hey, I failed bad here, and then this other risk like took off?
Funny enough, it's the same incident. Back to my dad. Funny enough, I remember I've been painting for a while and I got bored around like 2021, 2022. And I'm thinking, okay, I want to expand this. So I remember, I was like, okay, look, like, I really want to make marble sculptures. So I start sculpting. And I was quite online for a while. I didn't really post much. And I posted one of these, like, sculptures. I remember it going super viral. And I'm like, what is going on here? And I realized that, oh, damn, like, when have you seen a woman in Gilead marble before? I was like, okay, fair enough. Like, there's something there that people are reacting to. Like, this is, it's interesting. It's new. And so, you know, we started, like, producing them physically. And I remember I put a picture of, like, it's in progress. And, like, J5, you know, shout out to him. He saw them. He's like, bro, like, whatever's going on, I want all of them. And so he bought the first ever 4 sculptures.
How much did those sell for?
A lot.
No, we'll be transparent now.
Yeah, it was like 40K. Like, so 40K was, like, the list price.
Dollar.
Like, yeah, that was, like.
Yay.
So.
Relax, was, relax. Yeah, sounding like you millionaires. Yes, I'm millionaires.
So it's like,
you don't have to do the special effects.
That was to us, you know, like us making it work and like being like, okay, like there's something here. It would take us like another like 2 years. That was 2021. Yeah, like so 2 years later, we're like, okay, look, now we're partnering with Igona for like my next solo exhibition. We're like, okay, look, we want to have like more of these sculptures. But it just takes a while. It's like, you know, I was busy doing whatever. So I remember our goal was to have like 8 of these sculptures. So you walk in and it's almost like a museum type thing. And my God, I just think that the money that it took to do that just kept on growing and growing and growing. Like, you get the money for the production was like, okay, cool. Then the money for shipping, the money for clearing. And at some point it hooked because we just didn't have any money anymore. We put in some of the money. We put in so much that we're done. Like, we just don't have anybody to finish this thing. And it's like, fuck. And at that time, we had, like, taken credit lines and all that to, like, help fund. But now we don't have the sculptures to sell. So it means that now we're in a deficit. Like, now I'm owing money. I can't even sell the products because they're still, like, they're locked in the ports because those guys, if you don't bring the money, won't give you the product. And it was just there. I was like, okay, Man. And I remember for months, like, it was just very, like, one of those ones where it's like, damn, like, I should have known. How was I so off? I just say you're beating yourself up. And it's just like, what is going on? Like, what is happening? And, you know, with socials and this life, it's like you're fighting these battles and it's like everybody's disturbing you for something else. And it's just like, bro, you guys, like, leave me alone. But you can't say that. It's like, aha. So for months, I just kept on trying. Like, I couldn't, like, sort it. We were down by a lot. Like, we were down by a lot of money. And I remember January the next year, that's last year, I was like, you know what, hands in the air. I went to the big OG, I went to my dad, I was like, look, this is the thing that we're facing. This is how I fuck things up. I don't know. I don't know how else to. And I remember, like, and it's a roundabout moment. I tell him about this random problem, this random shipping on a Monday. By Wednesday, he comes through. And I was like, oh, fair enough. Like, thanks. Like, you really saved us.
Should have gone to OG since then.
Yeah, but I was like, Odogwu. For me, it's like, I needed to make it like.
You want to be sure you're a man.
Yeah, but I was like, bro, like, as the time just kept stretching, the problem kept getting deep. Bro, like, it was getting crazier. And, but him, like, he didn't, like, there wasn't even any, like, it was just more like, okay, this is the thing. This is the report. Okay, cool. No problem. And, like, he really helped us out from that thing. And we really appreciated that. So, like, now, imagine we freed the sculptures. A couple months later, now we're back up because we have the sculptures. And I'm like, look, by the way, we have the money back. And it's like, no, just keep it. And I was like, oh, fair.
Your dad said keep it?
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Because, like, and I was like, I really, for us, it was kind of like a moment because it's like, that to him, like, he was supporting, like, the work and he has seen it. And he has so much faith. Because, again, this was, like, a lot of money. And like I said, I'm hitting your mother on a random Monday. You have your own things going on. And you just came through.
Unexpected billing.
Do you get it? Like, now that I'm older, I also understand how annoying that can be because it's like, imagine, like, I'm just on my own, man. Like, I'm trying to do
my
own
thing. Wait, can you say, because I think it's really important we start being transparent about these things. How much did it take to produce?
Yes. Man. I can't remember the exact number. Okay. I remember, like, but all I can say is by that time, like, the money we were looking for, the money for clearing production, like, it took maybe, like, 10 to 20K out of us.
Dollars?
Yeah, like, because there's a lot. Like, the work is expensive, shipping is expensive, clearing too, they'll take their own, blah, 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 blah. And obviously, like, we had put some of the money in, but, like, there was a chunk that we just didn't have. Mm. And we kept trying, but, like, cost of lineup, I had made bad decisions when it came to, like, particular deals that we just shouldn't have made. And it just meant that beginning into 2024, we're starting, like, Zero is actually a good place. I learned last year that Zero is a great place because I didn't know that there was a minus. Minus is where you don't want to be. And we're starting at, like, a minus. Like, we started 2024 with, like, around 20K, like, 10 to 20K minus. And it's like, fuck, how are we going to do this? And I remember, like, my manager, Kiton, this is the first time I'm actually talking about these things. Like, my manager, Kiton, I was like, bro, like, what's going to happen? I was like, okay, cool. I would just made a plan. I remember, and in Naira, this is like fucking almost 20 mil. I remember I said, okay, cool. Day by day, we're just sorting it out. I started bringing out my other talents. I started creating, directing. I said, look, guys, artists, come bring your music. Bring your music. I'm back in the business. I'll be creative again. Like, come, like, don't worry. Like, let's discuss. By March, we had cleared this whole thing. Yeah. By December, we cleared 100 million mark. And I was just like, damn.
With the statue or the sculpture?
Just in general, everything. Like, we made 100, like, do you get what?
Hustle.
Like, hustle. So, and I remember just thinking, I looked at it, and I'm like, damn. Omo, like, I was like, it was like Thanksgiving. I was like, bro, man, that's why, like, December, I was in a good mood. Like, I didn't even do so much. I was in my house. I said, God, because, like, niggas couldn't know, like, what we had to just fight to
the
not
whole
just
year.
Get back to zero, but in green to be enough for us. Like, oh, yeah. Why is she cool? Like, why, like, stuff is making sense again. So, yeah, it was a very, last year was a crazy year. Like, crazy, crazy year. We saw things we didn't know we'd see. And even this year is beginning to be a funny year. But, like, because we face, like, so much, like, we just don't panic. We're like, okay, like, this is, this is what God is doing. Okay, now let's push. So I think that's kind of like number wise what it was. Like it took a lot. It took a whole lot.
I want to ask you directly. Do you think Web3 is dead?
No. I think it's just like evolved. And I think it's kind of like with the internet, with like the maybe like the dot-com boom. It's like at the time everybody's making websites and selling these websites for like $500 million, blah, 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 blah. But at some point, like value starts to get like actually like more realistic. So I think it's just become more realistic. And I feel like a lot more of the politics are set in, a lot more of the, you know, initial gra-gra. So I feel like it's not dead. It's just more mature now. And that just means that like a lot of deals that would have been crazy in 2021 are now like everybody's taking their time to properly investigate. It's like, because a lot of people, investors and collectors, like they spent a lot of money on particular artists or collections or like on people that they can't find them again. Like, because it was crypto. Do you know what I'm saying? Like a lot of niggas were like,
my name have disappeared.
So they've gone.
Santorini.
So do you know what I'm saying? So like them, so everybody's just like, yeah, they're reassessing their pockets, trying to see what's happening. I think that's what it is with Web3.
And do you, because I feel like, well, number one, I even want to know, how did you get into it? Like, you're here, you're in university somewhere, not bro, even in Lagos. Like, how did you find your way?
And that's the thing, I feel like for me, it's always just been just people, which is why we're always just like, you know, we're really just being friendly. I'm just always in my community. I'm just chilling in my, like, in Covenants one day, and this random guy, like, he messages me and he's talking to me about like Web3 and like super rare NFTs. I'm like, bro, I don't have this money for this crypto, P, I beg. Like, cause in my head, all I knew crypto was just like all these scams and all this like MMM stuff. I was like, bro, I beg. Like, come on. Like, I'm dealing with something else right now. It's like, bro, like, leave me alone. Covenant is stressing me. But he's like, no. He really thinks. And I was like, okay, let it not be as if like God sent one angel to me and I did answer. So I said, okay, cool. Like, I started applying to all these like super rare them. I remember I going to super rare. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I guess. Because at the time, I didn't understand what was going on. And then I do like this drop with this. So his name is Mango Dogwood, and he used to work with, I don't know if he still works there, this platform called Charge Particles, and they were doing a drop on the inner artist. And I was like, what do you want to drop with us? I'm like, I'm not really understanding a lot of these terms. Like, you know, we eat. But I said, okay, let's go in. And I remember like being in Covenant at that time. I was on my laptop. Wi-Fi is slow. And so I'm the last person to mint. And I'm just like, I just didn't know. I was just chilling. And I remember 5 minutes later, they're telling me congratulations in the Discord. I'm like, congratulations about what? People are like messaging me on Twitter. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? And it's like, oh, bro, you just sold out in like 5 minutes. Like, I'm like, okay. And like, I see my wallet and I'm seeing like, oh, like five ETH. Blah, 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 blah.
Five ETH.
By the time, it's like ETH was 800 or something.
$800.
Yeah, ETH was 800.
So you had five of that.
So it's like 4K. But I didn't know it was like, because I was like, in my head, it was like Sims. It was like, you know, Sims money. So I was like,
you don't know what's going on.
I didn't know what's going on. I was like thinking, because at the end of the day, yeah, because I had so many issues with payment rails, until the money is in Naira, that I can see and understand. For me, I was just like, I don't want to.
Trauma.
So I remember, I'm just like, okay, this ETH. I'm like, okay, you're saying that, I guess. I believe you.
Said that ETH.
ETH. So what that happened was, I'm trying to like search to convert this ETH to Naira. And I remember, I now come across this company called Coin Profile. And it's run by this guy called Bash. And I mean, we just connect. I was like, bro, I'm trying to like convert this money to Naira. And at the time, I was even scared. I was like, bro, like, if you got this thing to Naira, like, would they block my account? And he asked me how much. I'm like, it was like, it's like 4,000. He's like, bro, don't worry. Like, you're good. And I remember thinking, you just called me broke. And when I converted the money for the first time, I remember thinking, oh. I was like, okay, sorry. I said, let me sit up. I was like, you guys talk to me more. Like, let's talk about NFTs. Let's talk about ETH. Because I was like, bro, like, for me, what was powerful was, this is not money I wasn't making from commissions or anything. And I'd only had moments of that with like my painting. So I was like, could this be like, are we actually? And I think that was just a very crazy. So that's how the whole thing started. And I started experimenting with like super rare, started understanding more of the space. And it's like really, wading through. And I feel like we met either before or after this time. I can't remember.
Yeah, around that time.
And I was like, mad. I was like, okay, then Nigerians have all this crypto thing. Like, okay, like, let's all be going. Let's all discover it. Yeah, so I think it was very interesting. It was fun. It was like being part of this like fun little group that was like making Brian, like, we're all just like figuring things out together. And I think it's also been interesting to see how things have evolved or devolved like the past 5 years. Cause it's like a lot of that joy and that sparkle in everyone's eyes is kind of gone. Cause it's kind of like everybody had their little game. We're all playing. We're all having fun. And like now, like, bigger companies and bigger movers enter, and it's not like, okay, I guess. Like,
but let me ask you, around that time, whether it's you personally or what you saw from it, what was the like highest proceeds that came through the NFT thing that you witnessed? And also for you too, like, because it felt like the golden magical moment, anything that was released was going up.
Bruh.
What was that period like, if you could explain it to people watching?
I feel like I said, it was a multiplier in the sense where it's like, if you're like a beginner artist, you could still like, in dollars, you could have done something within 1 to 5K. Like you could get like cool stuff. I feel like for us, like the highest deal we got from there was Redman 25K. And I remember like, but another thing with the whole crypto bull is that it also desensitizes you, because like the money's coming in ETH. You've seen all these figures, like a lot of us, like you stop seeing the money as like actual money. It's just like, it's like games, like points. It's like
gamified.
Yeah, it's gamified. And I feel like that was also something that like just fucked a lot of us. Cause it's like, you don't really like deep in that. You're playing this, you know, no funny games and points with actual money that like can actually change your life. So I think like, yeah, like I saw many things, man. I saw many things. Like there's money I've lost that like I can never speak. Cause I feel like my mom would just hear it somehow. And like,
no, but we have to share these parts though. So let me ask you this. ETH obviously goes up, it goes down, right? So someone buys the Redman, maybe it's at 800, but ETH can, I remember at the time, ETH rose all the way to 4K.
4K, yeah.
For one.
And by ETH, we mean Ethereum too, let's be clear. How much have you seen it when it was low and it was bought at? And how much have you seen it rise? And how much have you seen it fall where you're like, I should have taken profits?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. I've seen things. I feel like, that's why I'm happy I kind of had this experience at a young age, because it just, I have a very advanced understanding now of how like, you can like, everything can be so sweet on Monday, but Wednesday can come, if you're not prepared, it can be brazy.
Yeah.
So when I started, like ETH was like 800. And while it was climbing again, like me, I'm not really into the speculative market. I was like, okay, like I was climbing, like thank God, I guess. But like, I'm not, like I said, I was fighting chemical engineering and lecturers. Like my mind wasn't too like tapped in. Then the Redman sale happens. Like, that's cool. And I forget what happened. It was 2022 or 2023. I remember the crash. And that crash was violent and sudden, because it was like, it took me down. My net worth went from like X to X divided by 2. I think definitely lost like 20, 30K, like just overnight. And I remember thinking, so this is how life can be. So life can be like this, like really, like, I was like, God, are we really going to do this? Come on, man. Like, so stuff like that also now like teaches you, obviously, like always
take profits,
like de-risk, like don't be daft. Like don't like just stick around for like these things. Like it can get wicked out here. But it also taught me about like endurance, because it's like, you also get into this mode of you have to make shit work. Like for like last year, we're starting the year in debt. Like our heads are hot. Like when zero and we're trying to figure things out, it's like, you can like cry and you can like be like, ah, oh God, like why me, boo, 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 boo. But it's also a thing of, I'm already here. Like, do you get, like, there's no, the way I did it, especially the way I left and I've left since, is that like, there's no backup. There's no, you know, like maybe I'll go and do something else. Like if it's not this, it's nothing. So it also has like forced me to make it work somehow through somewhere. There's a way we can like keep like momentum. So I think, yeah, like that was like, so from 800, so it's 800, went to like 4K. Then I remember it went to like something silly, like 900 or 1K. And I remember thinking like, what are we doing? So when it started rising again, like, you know, stuff is moving, everybody's happy. I'm just like, I'm stoic. I'm like, don't worry, guys, it's cool. I've seen these rooms before. I know what's happening. So like now, even when like it crashes, I remember there's one time it crashed again. I said, and people are like, oh, why are you so calm? I'm like, don't worry, man. Like, I know what's happening. And I know now how to position myself in a way where like these things are now more annoying than debilitating. And even then, like funny enough, I had like, you know, I did like the risk a bit, but not enough. Because, you know, I had money in Naira, dollars, but most of it was ETH. And so it really did, it took a big, big hit.
And can you talk about the opportunity of the business of art, right? I feel like it's a booming industry in Nigeria, across Africa. I'm starting to see a way more attention to it, but I still think people don't understand what business opportunities specifically are in that industry.
I feel like they're also like different kind of artists in the way I see it, because like there's like artists that are like gallery, like, you know, gallery artists, they're like very much niche, they're very much in their studio type of thing. Then there's artists like me who like, you know, you come out to do podcasts, like we're out and about, like we're connecting with people. And, you know, for like the first side, I can imagine that if you have a gallery supporting you like in that way, like you don't really have to do too much. You don't really have to like do too much promotion, because like they're the ones, that's the storefront. For us, it's always been a bit like different in terms of like the business opportunities. Like, for instance, like, let's say the first one is sales, like making money through like core art sales, like sculptures, paintings, Licensing has also been a big thing. It doesn't happen so often, but like, let's say you have this book and you're like, oh yeah, like Anthony, I like this painting you did. We want to make this the cover of the book. And we're like, okay, like, look, you're going to pay this fee. I'm going to license it to you. Similar to, there was a game, Rocket League. I didn't know about like this game, but it's a big game apparently. And it's like, they came and they're like, look, we're doing this Black History Month thing. We like this painting. Like, can you license it to us to be a game skin and then we'll pay you? And it's like, okay, yeah, sure. Like, so we have stuff like that coming from time to time. For us, sometimes we do like agency work. So like, let's say you guys need something. I particularly may not have the skills, but I know someone who does. And then we like bring together that, we like manage that project, like facilitate, maybe take a percentage. Or sometimes you just like leave it and just be like, look, like, here's the person. What else? Like commissions, definitely. So I was like heavily involved in like music. So music is how I was like doing a lot of covers. And that's kind of how I was making like a lot of my money before like Prince and like my own solo practice. It was mainly just doing work for like labels, studios, And yeah, I think, and then obviously as a person, like personal brand, like maybe sometimes like people will pay to like for you to speak somewhere, to give like an honorarium, or like maybe fly you out, like do a panel. So I feel like it's a mix of like lots of brand and like art stuff that we've been able to mesh together.
Have you ever felt very lonely in this art world and building this business?
Yeah, I think, especially like, I think the loneliest I ever felt was during that like height of everything, because it's like, you're kind of being directly, like, because it's a multiplier, you're directly being pushed into like this sphere of life that like, I wasn't like particularly like ready for. It's not like I didn't have time to like breathe in and be like, okay, now I do this. It was more like, I have to, because if not, like this is happening. So it was a very much back to back to back. You don't have that much time to like process what's happening. Or to maybe a year later, you're like, damn, I was kind of fucked up. Like, it's only now that I'm realizing, like, God, like, I was really living in this hotel for like 2 months. Like, it was weird. That was really weird. And so, yeah, in the art business, like, because for me, a lot of the stuff that we're doing was outside. Like, normally, like, as a visual artist, if they tell you that, oh, mom, we don't like your work like that, like, you stay home, do you get, maybe you find another guy, blah, 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 blah. That's not what we did. We said, you know what, nah, like, fuck this. Like, let's get a space together. I knew Mike, the owner of Free Me Space. We built our own walls, and that's how we did things. But you do stuff like that over and over again, and it can kind of, like, sometimes set you apart from the crowd in a bad way. Whereas like, people are like, okay, so you think you're too cool? Like, okay, you don't want to come. And that's just not the vibe. It's like, you know, if you're willing to do business, like we're always down. So yeah, I think it does get lonely from time to time, because like I also know that the work I do and the approach has been different. But at the same time, it's like, we're not anti. Like, we're very open to working. It's like, you know, so yeah.
We created the Afropolitan podcast because we wanted to make sure we tell the stories of those who came before us and those who are coming in front of us.
Our stories deserve to be documented and remembered.
And over here at Afropolitan, our drink of choice is Inbaroche, which is a gin from South Africa, because we believe African brands are global. So Eche, what are you toasting to?
To our builders, our innovators, to show that Black brilliance exists worldwide.
I am toasting to African creativity. I feel like the world is just blossoming with beautiful African storytellers.
Here's to legacy.
And stories worth sharing.
So babes, I'm always talking to you about investing. How's your journey going so far?
It started because you've been on my head for the past 6 months about investing, and you'll be proud of me because I actually found an app I love. It's called RiseVest. And actually what I love about it is that you can start with $10 and it automates everything for you. So literally I just go into the app and literally it's investing for me every single day.
Yeah, because we know you're not going to be a trader anytime soon. But with RiseVest, you're going to be able to invest in U.S. stocks, right? Fixed income, real estate, etc., right? And so I'm happy you're finally on board.
And you know, the funny thing too is I always tell my girls that as women, we're not investing enough, we're not talking about it, and we're not having these conversations. So I shared it in all my group chats. So you can find RiseVest on the Apple and Google Play Store.
Okay, make sure to use code Afropolitan so that they know that we sent you. You know how every week we sit down with people who've done it, people who've built, people who've led movements, people who've created culture. What if you could do more than just listen to them? That is why we built Convo by Afropolitan. On Convo, you're able to book one-on-one video calls with in-demand experts from Africa and the diaspora. Go to convo.vip to get access to your next mentor, because sometimes one convo can change your entire path.
So we're going to do our rapid-fire questions.
Okay.
These are going to be random.
Random.
Okay. So just go with the flow. So I think the question I always like, because people connect with this, is what's your favorite Nigerian dish?
Jollof rice. Fried rice. Yeah.
Fried rice.
Which one? Which one? Say jollof. Fried rice. Jollof was just because, like, you know, like public opinion. Public opinion was getting to me.
Drag you outside.
Yeah, it was fried rice.
It's fried rice.
Really?
Yeah. Fuck with fried rice, man. Fuck no, plantain.
But this is why you are Jabota, though. Yeah, other people don't say it's jollof.
No, see.
This why they said you come in so that they can
understand. I understand they're appealing for jollof, but like fried rice is OG. Like, it's just the problem is it's so niche. It has to be done properly.
Yeah, it has to be done properly.
Yeah, so but fried rice.
Mega Chicken does really good fried rice.
I've heard like only good things about Mega Chicken, but like I don't know. I haven't been there in a long time.
They make, like, it's funny because I used to go there all the time because I lived closer to one, and they really make really good fried rice.
I don't know why. I feel like when I was sick, I remember the time I was in the hospital, like, my daddy brought Mega Chicken. That's the last memory I have from like 12 years ago. But I haven't personally.
Been around that long?
I actually haven't.
Has it?
I've known it for like 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
I haven't entered the chicken. I don't think I've ever entered the Mega Chicken.
There's one, third roundabout in Lekki. They build a big one.
I know. It's like around.
Yeah.
Like around White Sands, funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. I see. I'm just like, I guess. But I've just never.
Yeah, that's really good food.
I may try it one day.
So make moves. All right. What's your favorite mythological figure ever?
Fuck. Shango. Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
I just feel like he's just underrepresented in like media and like the stories. Because again, with the myth, it's never just one story. Like, I feel like the stories are just so interesting. It's like, there's a lot of depth and thoughts into this person that like hasn't always been fleshed out. So yeah.
If you could only keep one book on your shelf, what would it be?
It's meant to be rapid fire, man. Still Like an Artist. I think that was a really great book.
Okay. What's a movie or TV show that inspires your visual style?
I think Into the Spider-Verse, like the craft that those guys put in.
You said Into the Spider-Verse?
Yeah, like those guys are cracked. Like being able to just really work at something for a long time, I think is inspiring.
If you had to choose, would you rather lose your art or your words?
Art.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they're both important. I feel like just words, like that's, it was from writing that people started knowing my work.
If you weren't an artist, what job would you be doing? We know it's dead. Not chemical engineering, but
I'd just be dead, man. I can't think of.
Really? I'd
just be dead, man. Like, there's no. Which other job can I do? Yeah, there's nothing I can think of. Honestly, I've thought about it before, but I just don't think I would be able to like live. I feel like I would always be doing this in some way.
And you know, the beautiful thing about it is you've also locked yourself into the mindset of this has to work. There's no plan B.
Thanks for reminding me. And sometimes, me, really
no, but because sometimes I feel like people. We're always taught to hedge our bets and, you know, diversify our portfolio. No, it's smart. But really, where you get the biggest returns in life is compounding on the one thing. And then when you then maximize that, then you diversify.
Yeah.
If you diversify first, you don't maximize.
Actually, I have an idea for you because you remind me of this person. You know, young Peplo. That's his name, Young Peplo. You know him.
No.
He's a writer. I was watching his interview and he actually has a fund now. So he invests in, because his writing is from the perspective of like wellness. So he invests in wellness. So I can see that for you.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like stuff like that is even something that me and my manager were just talking about. Like you're definitely investing in like other stuff that like can bring like passive returns that can like free our minds from having to think about like the money thing like day to day. So yeah, definitely.
So in closing,
okay,
when we look back 50 years from now, what should the name Anthony Ezekwo represent in African art?
The greatest ever to, I think that means
the goats.
Yeah, the goats. Like they're like, bro, like this guy, we don't know. Like, he finished work. Like we didn't know he was gonna do that, but like he did that. So I think, you know, because I think that's really just it. I think we've seen like a lot of like doing gatekeepers and like just obstacles. But I feel like for me it's like people connect with the work, they see it, like regardless of the medium, regardless of how, like, you know that this is dope work. And I think in the 5 years, I've been able to see people tattoo my work, like, tell me how, like, it connected them with, like, their parents or, like, and I feel like moments like that, to me, like, they don't just fade, like, they just compound. So I think I'm onto something.
Hey, what does gatekeeping look like in the art world? Especially, obviously, there's galleries that gatekeep, there might be museums that gatekeep, but in this digital era that we're in, what does that also look like just in general? What does gatekeeping look like in general?
Yeah, same thing. I feel like because everybody's meant to make art in a particular way, or at least within a particular like scope, and it's like this guy like who's doing this thing on his like laptop, and he's like he's trying to like, it's almost like it's traditional but it's not quite, so it's like it's sometimes it can even be unintentional, but just because they don't know how to quite place it right now, it ends up just being like, yeah, you know what, let him just stay in that corner. Like, let's just, let him just like stay on that side. And I think that's just what it looks like for us right now, where it's like, thankfully, like the sentiment against like my work in particular has changed over the past 5 years. Like before it was like, fuck this guy. Now it's more like, okay, he's doing cool stuff, but it's like, how does that fit into everything else we're doing?
Yeah.
And I think our goal this year is to be like, don't worry, like we've been working. This is exactly how, and this is how we can all work. So yeah,
how many tattoos do you have?
That's a good question. I think it's 18 or 21.
This is why they sent you the Covenant, by the way. this is what they were trying to stop.
18 or 21. It's one of those.
That's such an odd number.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like I forgot. See, I feel like I forgot like two.
Say it's bad gang.
Yeah, bad gang. So I'm trying to remember.
Did you do all of them here?
Yeah, but then there was this guy, like he's from the Philippines. And like he did like a lot more of the intricate ones, like, but he was a dope guy. But yeah,
where did you meet him?
And you meet lots of people when they're in the bad guy. Like everybody.
wait, he's from the Philippines here?
No, he's from the Philippines, but he came here for like 3 weeks and it was like a residency in like a store. So I caught him at the right time.
There's tattoo artists that do residency here.
God, Chica, things are happening.
Things are happening, Lagos, things are happening, man. Like, in bad gang life.
In bad gang, yeah.
Things are happening. Let me get another tattoo.
Yeah, like, how many do you have?
I have 3.
Come on, man. Like, you know, like, you need to write these numbers up. Like,
you know, I know, reason, but my dad doesn't know that.
The reason I never got tats was when my parents were leaving me to go to school in the U.S., my dad said there are 3 things I need to not do. No tattoos, no piercings, don't get any girl pregnant. I said, is that all?
Because if that's things,
all.
Man,
like, no, but I was like, if that's all, I know now. There's still a low boy in the streets that my can get into,
enough,
you know?
Funny enough, my mom, so it's so strange. This is a conversation I have to have with my mom one of these days. So my mom, I think because my mom was like, you'll eventually grow out of these things. So I'm just going to allow you to do it. but eventually you will move on. I got my belly button pierced at 15.
Fizz.
She went with me. And then, and then around 17, because I wanted it right before my birthday, I told my mom I want a tattoo. Ooh. And my mom went with me to get my first tattoo. Yeah.
My mom hated my piercings. the piercings, the tattoo, because I did my first one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember 2020 just because like that year things were making sense. I was like, I need to remember this year. So I remember I got and I showed her and I remember her being like, wow, okay, I like it. It's really nice. And it kind of pissed me off a bit because I was like, bro, like, what do you mean? Like, you like it? It's like, we're not meant to agree on this design. But she was really supportive about the tattoos, but the piercings.
Wait, where did you get piercings?
These two.
Uh-huh.
Bro, like, something about them just triggered something. Really? Like that. And I wasn't even living with them at the time. So it was really, and I was like, bro, like, it's already done, man. We can't do much. But funny enough, like, 2 months after, we were even planning to go to the market to, like, get, like, new piercings. Because, you know, they give you the studs.
Yeah, yeah.
So after a while, she did get, like, she understood it. Then the tattoo, I feel like when it started to, like, get more, she was like, okay, look. Look, let's hold on. Like, relax. It's getting a bit crazy. So I think, yeah, like, the tattoos, even my dad, I think he just recently... You know when you're just seeing someone, but you don't really like look at them. So I got chicken pox last year. So I remember I'm showing him like that the scars are kind of gone, the chicken boxes are gone. And he's like, how are these tattoos? Like, what's going on? And I was looking at him like, bro, like, I've had this for 3 years. I wasn't even hiding them. So yeah, I feel like everybody, you know what the tattoos, we just see them, just have to accept it. Like, oh man, it's there, man. It's like, it's long.
Because it's also sometimes too late. It's already done.
It's already done. And yeah, that's why.
I want more, but then.
You should.
I don't know. I think it's an age thing. I'm like, I'm kind of getting old.
When you get older, you get more conservative.
Yeah, I think that's really? What it is. Yeah, because so funny enough, we were talking about it this morning because Etienne Redden was like, babe, that's good. You should have a nose piercing. And I was like, I already had them. Like, your legs. Yeah. I had it twice.
I didn't know how in that era.
Yeah, I had it twice. But then what happened is when I was playing flag football, I would have to, like, I think one day a net or something caught it and took it out. And then, like, and I re-pierced it. Yeah, and I noticed that unfortunately, my skin is so sensitive. I can't even wear fake gold. If I wear fake gold, my skin will irritate. So I had piercings here. My skin pushed it out. I love these piercings.
The cartilage ones.
Yeah, I love them. Oh my god, they were so cute. But I had to take all of them out.
I didn't even know about that fake jewelry thing.
Bad gang on the couch.
Yeah, bro, like that fake jewelry thing, like it was hurting. Yeah. Like, because I was wondering, like, why am I ear stinging? And yeah. I was like, oh no, I was like, I'm on a damn no.
Yeah, after this interview, I have to take these off because they start reacting. My skin. Yeah.
I think I'm going to start. I think I sleep with my earrings.
I mean, if you're doing this, you might as well just get the 14, the 18 carat and just have it.
But chica, man, the 18 carats. Why are you saying like it's so easy?
Police will pull him over and he say, well, okay.
Okay.
Let me help you hold that. 18 carat.
You know, we have a good like gem gold industry here. So you can get it locally here.
How much is it?
I don't know because this is 18 karat. This one, Etche was.
I don't want to hear the prices. You guys leave me alone. I'm managing my Pandora and Swarovski.
Swarovski.
I'm just managing them. I'll come back
okay,
to you.
Okay. Okay. So last question we ask every guest on this podcast is: who do you want to see on the Afropolitan podcast?
I think Renika would be cool. I think you guys will have a fun time with her. Like, okay. Renika is like really interesting. Like her path from being a digital artist, definitely there's just an artist, and then like right now, like a businesswoman with the bossy dresses, like she's also been crazy to like watch. Because when I met her, she's one of the digital artists I was looking at. I used to DM her, I'm like, guys, you guys, me, I'm just a young guy, like I'm trying to make it. Like, you guys, yeah, man. She used to always just be so like nice and like friendly. I think she'd be someone that you guys would be cool with.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Anthony.
Thank you, man.